And good morning, KCNR 1460. It is 7:05 and 74 degrees. And Carl and Linda Bott are still on their way back from Washington, D.C. They were taking care of some family business. They'll be back on Free Fire Radio tomorrow. And we want to welcome into the studio Trish Clark. Good morning, Trish.
Good morning, Bob.
And as I was driving in this morning, I couldn't help but notice the sun just breaking over the horizon, lighting up Shasta Bali and the sunlight coming down the mountain. And, you know, it's so good to be living here.
Shasta County is a wonderful place to live, and I'm so enthralled with the weather we've had in the last week. I feel like a weather forecaster when I talk to people, because where else can you live where you can go from 105 degrees and then it's raining and it's 60 and you're almost ready to start a fire in the fireplace, and then what is by 103 by Thursday is what we're talking about?
104 by Thursday, and we'll be talking about that. We got a forecast coming up in just a little bit, but it will be a little toasty, but it's just a bump in the road, and then it's cooling off at night. I don't know if the term is still politically correct to call it Indian summer, but it is just that beautiful time of year. When you get, I don't mind the heat if you can get a break, you know?
Well, and I think we've had an absolutely delightful year from my estimation. We have not had any major weather problems all year long. We've had a little bit of the high stuff and a beautiful spring. I think it's been great. And one thing we don't have to worry about for the next couple hours, Bob, is whether we're politically correct. Because that's never been one of my strong suits. So we won't go there. We'll just kind of just do what we feel like doing.
605-4567. The phone lines are open. If you've been curious about something, Trish Clark, of course, can I use the word political veteran of Shasta County, and for a very long time. You started out as a council person in Anderson, is that correct?
I started out actually as a planning commissioner in Anderson. I actually started out on the school board at Sacred Heart School for a stint of about 6 or 8 years, was my kind of first elected position, and then went on to the planning commission. I was appointed there in Anderson and served on the city council and as mayor, and then 16 years on the Board of Supervisors, and thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it was probably one of the highlights of my life. I've actually had like 3 different careers, and that was one I stumbled into and thoroughly enjoyed, and enjoyed representing the people of Shasta County. It was a very big honor, and I think maybe changed some directions along the line, at least made people think once in a while, and I think that's a... Boy, have we got some interesting things going on in the election process here in Shasta County now that Redding City Council race is going to be something to kind of watch, I believe. And, of course, I don't live in Redding. I live in the city of Anderson, so I'm not directly involved in the outcome, except what happens in the city of Redding certainly affects all the citizens of Shasta County. And so it is going to be interesting, and there's a kind of a defining question there as to... are we going to continue to do business with the unions as we have over many years, or are we at some point going to draw the line in the sand and see if we can start turning things around?
Well, I know that you have a lot of topics for today, but one that's weighing on my mind before we go into the break here. City of Redding seemed to, by some accounts, kind of ignore the oncoming train. Anderson, on the other hand, saw the storm coming and made some plans ahead of time, and they seem to be dealing with the situation better than Redding did. Is that an accurate observation?
Oh, I think it's a very accurate observation. One of the issues that everyone is familiar with is this continuing discussion about the tax exchange agreement that ought to be reached at some point between the city of Redding and the county. People say it should be reached. One of the fallacies of that is that isn't going to happen unless somebody's in a position to gain a great deal of money. When we were going through that process, and you will remember that I was the one that was we don't need this tax exchange agreement, it's a death knell for the county, and we ought not to go there, and I was actually able to put that to bed, much to everyone's chagrin, and it didn't happen. But the point is, during that period, I kept pointing out that if you look at your projections and you look at the facts of what's actually happening, your projections are too aggressive. They're you're saying you're going to continue to grow at this tax rate that you have in the past, and if you look at what's actually happening, your growth is slipping every year. And if you look into the future, you're going to find that those numbers are simply not there. Well, certainly I've become the voice of prophecy, not that I'm sure anybody remembers or is going to give me credit for that. But at this point, the county would be in big trouble if they'd ever signed that tax exchange agreement.
Well, that certainly seems to have been the case. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and Trish Clark, our guest host this morning, I'm sure she has a whole raft of topics. If you'd like to join in the conversation, 605-4567, the call-in line. We're also firing up the chat room. That'll be operational in just a few moments at kcnr1460.com. We'll be back. Here at KCNR, the home of 74 degrees, here at KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. High today, 99 degrees under sunny skies. The low tonight, 71. Warming up, 104 for your Thursday. As I said, right now, 74 degrees here at KCNR. Now back to our guest host, Trish Clark.
Good morning, and I'm hoping that you will get out there and get on the line and bring me some stuff that I have not bringing up, because I'll just sit here and rattle off on whatever I want to talk about unless you give us a call and join in the conversation. And that would be great if you would just call us at 605-4587?
605-4567.
And if you'd like to call that number and jump in here with a conversation, I want to continue just a little bit about the myth that exists in this community about all these wonderful benefits of a tax exchange agreement. And I will tell you that the tax exchange agreement, in a perfect world, would enable proper planning and proper growth to occur as it should countywide. Having said that, it's not a perfect world. And until some entity is willing to give up some of their ability to generate revenue to one of the other agencies, and in this case, it basically would be the city of Reading, because they are the largest producer of tax revenue, sales tax revenue, in the county, because sales tax is generated situs. It's generated where the person spends the money, not by where they live in the county. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that most of the sales tax is generated in the city of Reading. Until they are willing to give some of that revenue to the other agencies so that the other agencies do not have to strive to build their revenue, tax exchange agreement isn't going to take place. Unless the county somehow starts drinking Russ Moll's Kool-Aid again and falls in to this thing that it's somehow going to help them. Because that just isn't the case. In fact, I would say, and I know that I'm correct, had the county and the city entered in to that tax exchange agreement back in, don't quote me on the year, 2003, 2004, thereabouts, they would now be transferring sales tax revenue to the city of Reading because the city of Reading's generation has decreased so much during that period. It isn't going to happen, and I hear it now, people saying that we should do that tax exchange agreement. Citizens of the county ought to look real hard at whether that's going to do them any good or not.
I have a quick question, and I'll give you a second. The at Pacheco, right there next to the truck stop.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that, first of all, by the auto mall not happening, we dodged a bullet, because, in my opinion, that place would now be one large, empty, cracked asphalt parking lot. Of it at best. But right now, that those fields sit fallow, great weed patches, and dilapidated buildings, and so it seems that something should be done. That is a very prime piece of property. Is there a balance that can be struck where some enterprises could come in there with something that's reasonably benign and in character, or do we allow developers to put up houses? But that doesn't appear to be viable either. Or do we just let the field sit there and grow weeds?
Well, let me just first, in a perfect world, again, there wouldn't be an interchange there, and that would this wouldn't be an issue. And had I been involved at the time that that interchange was going to be put in the middle of the bottom there, I would have fought that very vigorously, because that was the beginning of the end. As long as that interchange is there, eventually it's going to be developed. I would disagree with you a little bit over the auto mall, because I think that the timing was such that the zoning would have gotten through. They would not have built the auto mall because of the there just wasn't the revenue to do it. What would have been accomplished, though, is that the proper zoning would have been placed on that corner, and that future people coming in there, in fact, could have built something. In my estimation, the auto mall was probably the most viable, the best option that could have been. Had the money continued to be there and they could have built a nice auto mall there, it would have had the least impact of anything you can think of on the bottom. How many long lines have you ever seen at an auto mall? How much ongoing coming and going traffic? Let's take and put the Mount Shasta Mall there. What kind of an impact is that going to have? And that's the next proposal, is a commercial development like that, retail. That's going to have a huge impact on the on the bottom.
Well, but the thing that comes to my mind, Trish, is that all you have to do is go as far as Red Bluff and see that sadness that was Red Bluff Ford sitting there, that huge empty building.
Well, and exactly, but drive throughout Redding and look at huge empty buildings everywhere. That was simply a sign of the times, and I would tell you that when the economy picks back up, there'll be another auto dealer down there and at Red Bluff Ford, and things will go back as they have before. Certainly, people say we've been ups, we've been downs. I personally believe that Shasta County, the state of California, United States in general, is in a place that we haven't been before. And I think that...
Well, certainly not since the 1930s.
And I think it's even different than the 1930s because of the expectation of the population is so entirely different. We have so many less producers and so many more people who just are accustomed to and expecting to be taken care of. Certainly we're going in that direction. We've been doing that for 70 years, and that's why I think it's even different than what we went through in the Depression.
We're going to go ahead and take our break, 605-4567, the line to call in to join in the conversation, or you can get on the Internet, if you so desire, at kcnr1460.com. If you'd like to drop us an email, you can do so by writing to bob@kcnr1460.com, 720, and we'll be back.
Hi, this is Dr.
1460, the home of Free Fire Media. It is 7:23, and I just got a phone call from Carl, overseeing the station from the tarmac in an airplane in Chicago, of all places. And I don't know if he wanted to say hi to Obama's buddies while he was there or not, but no, they're sitting inside the airplane waiting to make the next leg of their journey home, and we wish them a safe journey. And they'll be back on the air tomorrow morning to tell you all about their adventures. Right now, we go back with our guest host, Trish Clark. And, Trish, all kinds of things going on. One of the things that amazes me as I look in the newspaper, which, of course, I almost try to avoid doing, because there are times when I just shake my head and say, you know, what universe are these people living in? It seems there are some people who want absolutely nothing to change ever under any circumstances. Kind of a banana thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or NIMBY or a banana thing. I've got mine. Nobody else can have any. Nothing's ever going to change. And that's not really realistic, is it?
Well, it isn't realistic. And unfortunately, we've gone through a lot of changes. As I indicated, the last, 60, 70 years, we've headed towards this welfare society. In my estimation, and of course that's what you're going to get this morning is my opinions. I think that one of the things that I've seen about this downturn in the economy, which is a good thing, is that because we're getting into an era where we don't have, government doesn't have the ability to help us in every way that we think they should, we're having to turn back a little closer to neighbors helping neighbors and people picking up the pieces a little bit. And in my mind, that's a good thing. I kind of would prefer to not have government so much involved in my life, and I'm not kind of would prefer. I absolutely would prefer to have the federal government go back to doing what they're constitutionally enabled to do, and have the state, you know, let them turn over back the power to the states that were supposed to be there. And local government really should be making the decisions about our everyday life. Unfortunately, the funding streams have gotten so distorted, and things are going to change. They've got to change. They've been changing. I think it's time now to turn that pendulum back. And we have a caller on the line?
Right. We have Jim on the phone. And Jim wanted to ask about, I hadn't been watching the news, the open carry law passed through the legislature. Did the governor sign it?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard much about it. And I'm kind of ignorant to the open carry gun law in the first place. And I was just wondering if anybody knew what was going on with that.
What I do know about it is simply that as it is right now, you can carry an unloaded gun in public any place in the state of California. And I believe what's going before it, the legislature now, is that you no longer will be able to carry an unloaded gun any place in public. I don't know that it's passed the Senate. I thought that it failed the vote in the Senate and they were going to go back for it again. The governor has expressed support of the bill if in fact it reaches his desk.
It's going to impact the asphalt cowboys.
It's going to, and that's
and law dogs and pistoleros and the enactors. I mean, even possibly people on stage.
Absolutely, and that's
the little guns that go bang and the flag comes out.
Yeah, what happened? Yeah, I mean, they can't do starter pistol. I mean, it's another one of those poorly written laws.
Well,
yeah.
it's another one of those silly laws that that makes somebody feel good. And there is absolutely nothing wrong, of course, I'm a big advocate of gun rights and trying to solve the problems that are created by a few people by passing a law that impacts everybody. Certainly, the Asphalt Cowboys is the first thing that jumps to your mind, because we have a tradition here in Shasta County that's a fun thing. They go out and they shoot and they run around with their guns and they hold up banks and everything. And you will remember that one year, because of some people that moved into Redding and were offended and startled by the gunshot, they actually said they weren't going to shoot the guns the next year.
Wow.
Come on, people.
Yeah.
We can't react to that kind of stuff.
And the other quick question I was going to ask you folks is, now, the city of Redding and Anderson and Shasta County, they're experiencing budget cuts in law enforcement. The same thing is happening in Oakland, California. They cut a lot of police positions out, and they're really struggling down there with their gang violence. Well, they have asked Salinas for help dealing with their gang problems, because Salinas has cut their gang-related homicides down from 50 a year, I believe in 2006, to only 6 this year. I was just wondering if Redding would be interested, or Shasta County, in asking Salinas for their assistance also. And I'll take my answer off the air.
I'm sure the law enforcement agencies do exchange that sort of information, but it would be interesting to hear about what they did.
It absolutely would. And the important thing that you need to recognize in all of these discussions up and down the state about police and fire safety is the reality that the state of California has gone beyond, at the state level and at the local level, has gone beyond what they can afford to pay for these services in the state of California. We must back up now and figure out how in the world we are going to provide law enforcement and fire departments and still be able to balance our budget. There's got to be some concessions made on both parts. And that starts at the state level. They're the ones that kicked in the 3% at 50 for state fire and highway patrol. And that's where it started. It's got to roll right back up there. And we've got to settle this issue once and for all.
All right, Trish, we'll be back on the other side of the news break. You're listening to KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. We'll be right back. KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. 75 degrees, looking for a high today right around the century mark. Now back to our guest host, Trish Clark. And Trish, we do have a caller on the line.
Well, let's go to the line and talk to Bill.
Morning, Bill.
Morning.
So you have some intel on the gun bills.
Yeah, I've looked up in California California laws for the news, and I've been following the GOC real close. And AB 1810 was shot down. The bill fell short during the initial vote on Monday.
And SB or AB 1810 is what?
The long gun registration.
Oh, okay.
And the AB 1934, which is the open carry, it was nearly approved on Tuesday with a 21-16 vote, but it failed in the assembly, so it's shot down too.
So it's we've dodged the bullet. You can take these metaphors from all over the place. All right, Bill, we will look for those stories on the Capitol News. I'll probably check the B here in a bit, but thanks for the info.
It's interesting because it's good that there are people who continue to watch this, and there's a very good watch group in the state of California, because every year there are so many bills that are introduced that pretend to solve some problem, but basically it's just a further attempt to take guns away from the citizens of California.
Well, it's not just guns. I'm an avid boater, and none other than the California Coastal Commission, bless their little hearts, is making moves to do things like clamp down heavy on marinas and force them to fill out more and more environmental impact paperwork, which will force many of them out of business, which, of course, I think may be the ultimate aim. But the thing is, here's the Coastal Commission saying that any waterway that eventually gets to the ocean should be under their jurisdiction. So in theory, since water in Shasta Lake eventually gets to the ocean, barring the building of the peripheral canal, thank you very much, they would be able to impose those very onerous requirements on local businesses that depend on the lake for their livelihood. So where do these people stop?
They don't stop, because if you take that to its nth degree, and some of the stuff we were looking at a while back with irrigation water, and certainly I'm not as up on this stuff as I was when I was on the Board of Supervisors. However, you can get into things like the acid canal. That water, through irrigation, through going then into the next segment and back into the Sacramento River, eventually gets to the ocean. And so if you want to stretch it clear out, you could go into your little water districts and give those people control over that. And don't think they're not headed in that direction.
Well, in Siskiyou County, ranchers are being, and this is Fish and Game stepping in and saying that these ranchers who have had water rights dating back to the Gold Rush days now have to justify those water rights. They have to allow, because of supposed coho salmon habitat, and people don't recall seeing a coho salmon. I mean, we're talking waterways that are a couple of inches deep and run about 2 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
No self-respecting coho salmon is going to be seen in those waters. And yet, because some biologist says, well, it could happen, these ranchers are being forced to literally open up their property to government agents to come and go as they please, and I think that's a really bad idea.
You know, I haven't followed the issues with irrigation and with water use and water rights since I got off the board. I know just enough about those issues at this point to know there's so much there, and water in the state of California certainly has been, water in general in the United States is a huge issue. The laws are so complex and so subject to determination, but it's an ongoing fight, and certainly in Northern California, we need to be sure that our boards of supervisors, city councils, and our public works people and water people are paying strict attention to those things, because we have a lot to lose in the north part of the state.
Well, was it not Mark Twain, and I'm paraphrasing quite liberally here, that And he made this observation a century ago that people will share their whiskey and fight over the water.
Yeah, that's right. Whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting.
KCNR 1460, and if you want to join in the conversation, and we've had a couple interesting calls, it is 605-4567, And we've got some folks in the chat room here. And, Trish, we had a question pop in a few minutes ago that the question, and I'll read this verbatim, was $600 trillion in worldwide debt, 10 times that of the world's gross product. What makes you think that the economy is going to get better? And I'm not sure what the next line is. Where do you think the solution comes from? I don't think it comes from government. I think it comes from individuals innovating.
Well, and I was going to tell you that, certainly I am not one to believe. I can remember all the times that I was running for office, and people would invariably ask me the question, so what are you going to do to create jobs? And my response always was that government shouldn't be in the position of creating jobs. Government is supposed to create an atmosphere that makes it good for private entrepreneurs and businesses to create jobs that put the people to work. We should put in regulations that are necessary, not over-regulate, not try to dictate. The government is not the creator of those jobs. Do I think the economy is going to get better at some point and given changes in perhaps the November election? Maybe things can happen and some things can turn around. If we continue to pass laws and regulations that strap the business people who won't... I mean, I think there is some money out there. I think there's some businesses that are still viable. They're in a kind of watch-and-see mode in my mind, and they're more apt to sit back and watch and see what's going to happen before they start putting people to work. I think that if taxes don't go up dramatically, if we don't try to tax and spend our way out of this problem, I think the economy will get better. I think we're in for a long haul, and as I said before, I don't think, in my mind, that we're in a position we've been in before. We're certainly going to give that theory that socialism is a better way than the free market system. And I disagree with that theory, but the administration that we are living under now certainly is going to give that socialist government take care of everything, we're not responsible for anything, a policy, an opportunity. I think it's going to fail miserably, and I hope it doesn't sink us completely in the process.
Are you possibly suggesting that the way to get more golden eggs is not to threaten to strangle the goose?
I think you're absolutely right.
KCNR 1460, it is 7:42, and we'll be back.
Hi,
KCNR 1460, and this is Free Fire Media. Let me give a quick weather report here. It is always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. High today should be around 99 degrees. Low tonight, 71, though, so that'll make sleeping a little bit easier. High tomorrow, though, 104, but then it'll taper off towards the end of the week, and we are looking for a wonderful weekend right now here at the KCNR studios. 75 degrees as we return back to our guest host, Trish Clark. And, Trish, we did have a comment on the line that I'm not sure exactly how to understand the statement. Free market definition, he who controls the gold. Well, if the government controls the gold, that would be the absolute antithesis of a free market. And I don't... I one of the quotes from Rush Limbaugh, and I don't know where he got it from, and I certainly don't follow... Rush is an entertainer. He is not a politician. He is not a guru of any sort, but he does make entertaining statements, one of which was... You can either take a pie and you can carve it into smaller and smaller pieces until everybody dies, or you bake a bigger pie. And I'm certainly a fan of that concept. And it doesn't have to be under the control. Are some of the corporations out of control? You betcha. But do we stifle all business and make it all a government-controlled thing? That's a bad idea.
No, you know, I think that the whole premise is supposed to be that we're supposed to vote with our pocketbook. And if you have a corporation or a company or a local donut shop that you don't like the way they do business, or that they have practices within their operation that you don't like, then you don't spend your money there. And if we as American citizens were to take back the responsibility that, that truly is ours to take care of ourselves and purchase those things that we want, and if the government were to back off and get out of control of everything that is produced in the United States, we might find ourselves back in a position where we, in fact, could support good businesses that, that do well and provide a good service. And those that are not meeting the needs of the American people would go away through attrition because they simply wouldn't be able, we wouldn't be spending our bucks there. I always encourage people to read a book that is called Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. And this book was written in the 30s. It goes into the development of the railroad industry, the steel industry, the oil industry, all of those things. And basically what happens when all of these great inventions and all of these great entrepreneurs are pushed into the corner by government and government actually takes over their minds, their ability to produce, and the people one by one kind of back off and say, okay, you take over all of my steel inventions and operations, and okay, you've got it, you own it. And then what happens to it? And in the book you find out that government doesn't do a very good job with those things. And certainly as I watch what's happening in America today, I would just encourage everyone to pick up a copy of Atlas Shrugged and see how this story ends if we don't make some changes.
It's interesting that, and I read the, I finally got down to, after hearing about it for years, read Atlas Shrugged beginning of the year, and it was like, my mouth is hanging open. And when Dr. McConnell, the new cardiac surgeon from Shasta Regional, was on a few weeks ago, he talked about a passage in the book that is a monologue by a neurosurgeon who leaves the medical profession. And this was about the time that the whole healthcare thing was coming to light. And he made some very interesting points. And so, yes, but interestingly enough, they have sold more copies of Atlas Shrugged, a book written in the 1950s, over the last 3 or 4 years than for the past 2 or 3 decades.
Exactly. Who is John Galt?
It's interesting, but that free market does work. Even societies that are rabidly socialist do allow, they have discovered they cannot survive without some free market forces helping things along.
Well, and I think it's, you know, we've got to get back to the basics. I pride myself on being a bit of a student of the Constitution and the Federalist Papers and learning about what the intentions of our forefathers were and what we were to be. We were to be a republic. They talked at great length about why a democracy does not work in its purest fashion and why we needed a republic. We have gone so far away, in my estimation, from the founders' beliefs and why they created the system that they did. I have high hopes, however, that we're kind of looking back at that now, and a lot of the people running for office throughout the United States, I think there's some interesting things happening that certainly I'm watching kind of closely and being involved with it at some levels, with some people who are not your regular run-of-the-mill thinkers that think that we just have to continue to support this massive government that we've created. At some point, we wind back around now to the police department discussion that we're having. Certainly, I believe that is the major priority, or should be, has to be, of any government, is that they are to provide for the safety of the community. And so police and fire have got to be, in my estimation, the biggest priority. I think that probably few elected officials in the Shasta County area would disagree with me. Having said that, everyone says, well, cut someplace else. Don't cut the police and fire.
Don't gore my ox.
But when you're looking at probably most general fund budgets, 70 to 80% of those budgets go towards the police and fire of the general fund budget. Now, we're not talking about as an example, in the city of Reading, the electric budget or the sewer budget or those things that have enterprise funds that operate separately. You take the general fund, the discretionary portion of what elected officials have any control over, and the bulk of it is going to go for public protection.
It is 7:51 here on Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460. We'll be back.
Timberline.
KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, about 5.5 minutes now before 8 o'clock if you're on your way to work. 75 degrees, going to get toasty today, but it cool right back down this evening. Now, back to our guest host, Trish Clark.
Good morning, everyone, and I'm looking for some more phone calls out there. We're having a good conversation. I hope you're enjoying the show this morning. You can give us a call at 605-4567.
We have a comment in the chat room about we do need to take care of our police and firefighters, and I could not agree more. We need to take care of our teachers. I do ask the question, we need to take care of the rank and file, but do we need to take care of the self-feeding, growing organism that is the union organizations? And they can't. They are started with the best of intentions. But it is too, they become so powerful that I think it becomes a corrupting influence. Would you agree with that?
I think you're absolutely right. I think unions overall, not just police and fire unions, but unions as such, in my estimation, were founded for a very good reason. I think that the members of the unions are no longer the issue. It is the union itself which has become a huge animal, certainly as we go higher up, that is the problem. But I want to go back with the police and fire, and I want to expand a little bit more on what I was speaking about with the general fund budgets of local agencies. You could lay off most of the county staff and still not be able to solve major general fund budget problems without smacking on the sheriff's department, simply because they take up the biggest part of that discretionary funding. Now, is it important that you keep those officers on the street? Absolutely. But there's going to have to be some give and take, and it boils down to that PERS retirement that's in the state of California, and it's unsustainable. I started making those statements 3 or 4 years before I got off the Board of Supervisors. This is unsustainable. I voted against the last budget that we did with DSA because I said you cannot sustain this into the future. You're going to reach a point where the retirees of these departments are going to be using up so much money, so much of your expendable money, you're not going to be able to afford to have people on the street to protect the population. We're fastly approaching that system in the state of California. You cannot cut $5 or $6 million out of a budget without cutting some out of law enforcement when they take 70 or 80%. Now, I agree, we need to keep the people on the street. We need, but in the sheriff's department, the board cannot direct the Shasta County Sheriff as to where he has to make the cuts. They can only determine how much money they give the sheriff's department. It's up to the sheriff where he spends it. I don't think that's true in the city of Reading because I think the city council has more control because they hire the police chief as well. He's not an elected official. But that's what's got to happen. We've got to keep those men and women on the street who actually protect the citizens. We've got to address that budget or the issue of the retirement. Perhaps there has to be some level of maybe they work till 55. Maybe they back off the 3% a little. I don't know where the final point is where we can reach a decision with these agencies, but I'm telling you it has to happen because what we're doing now is unsustainable. We cannot continue to have to pay that much money into retirement issues and have a viable police force at which we have to have. It's the most important thing local government does. And so I would believe, need to continue this discussion. Reading City Council has an issue before, right now, the voters. You're going to decide whether we deal with this issue now. i.e. solve this issue with the unions, and you'll do that by, I would say, keeping the present people in office and people who think like them, that majority who say, no, we're not going to give another contract, we're going to start solving the problem now, or you're going to elect a slate of people who the union is bringing in who are going to do perhaps what the state of California has been doing since the early 90s, and that is pushing it over one more year. Don't solve any problems. Put a Band-Aid on it. Shove it over one more year and let the next legislature
deal with
it.
Toss another ball into the air.
Exactly, because that's exactly what the state of California has been doing. And we'll go into that in the next hour a little bit, just a little history from Trish Clark's perspective as to why the state of California is where it is.
It's kind of like what? The splinter, you know, and you're afraid to draw it out, but the longer it sits there, the worse the, I guess, infection, if you want to keep running with that metaphor, gets to the point where you could end up losing the whole arm.
There you go. And it started, I think, in my estimation, with the term limits that we put on our legislators and Prop 13 and a whole bunch of things that have decisions that have been made that we're now living with.
We're going to continue the conversation after Fox News at the top of the hour. You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding. We'll be back. Good morning, Shasta County, 805 on the home of Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott are on their way back. In fact, I just got off the phone with Carl a few minutes ago on the tarmac at Chicago's O'Hare. They are winging their way home and will be back on the air tomorrow. But we have our very capable guest host, Trish Clark. And Trish, good morning. And we do have a call on the line.
Yes, good morning, and welcome, everyone. We're going to do another hour here, and hopefully we're talking about things that are interesting to you, and I'm having a good time, so that's kind of fun for a retired Chasta County supervisor to be able to put out their opinion once in a while. And we do have a very special guest called in this morning that we're going to go now and talk with, Assemblyman Jim Nielsen. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Trish. Good morning to you. Well, the citizens of California are going to be spared legislation as of midnight last night. The session has adjourned.
Well, hey, anytime you guys are not working, we're in good shape.
Will Rogers said nobody is safe while the legislature's in session.
Well, we can sleep easier tonight, folks. At midnight, it adjourned. It was kind of an interesting day. I think the good news, the open carry bill kept rearing its ugly head right till the very last minute, and we literally filibustered it until we got to the clock at midnight, and that bill died again.
Good.
It had been in the Senate for 7 times. It was brought up again yesterday. Finally got enough votes out of the Senate, came back to the Assembly, and we were able to stop that bill. The bag bill also was defeated yesterday. That I'm sure that California will not survive not having plastic, getting rid of plastic bags, but the so-called bag bill. You know, it was so absurd that we were spending so much time talking about plastic bags instead of the budget. I raised that in debate many, many times.
And, Jim, that's something that just amazes those of us out here in the real world. With the entire economy circling the drain, you're worried about plastic bags?
Last year it was light bulbs.
Yes.
There was a great preoccupation with it, but fortunately so many bills did not survive the last night. There was a budget drill yesterday. I actually presented the no taxes budget, and it was defeated. And then the Democrats presented the taxes budget, and that also did not secure the votes. The good news is it looks like there will be some serious negotiations, and in fact, I'm going to have to be doing quite a bit this next week on the budget. I believe that the message has been delivered that fixing the budget with tax increases is not the way to fix the budget, and the governor has been holding steady. There's some good news on pension reform. Some bills have passed, and the memorandums of understanding that the governor negotiated with certain key unions have also moved along. And so there's a first significant step in terms of pension reform, which would be one of the good accomplishments of the year. I'm very pleased also we were able to secure the passage of my Williamson Act legislation, which will, Trish, give counties, and you live this yourself, some encouragement to continue to renew or accept new Williamson Act contracts.
That's wonderful news.
It was a hard battle. Well, not really a battle. We didn't have any opposition. But getting everything together so it would work, and what this is, it's going to be a bridge where the counties can opt in, the individual landowners can opt in, and it will give the county an incentive to continue the Williamson Act if, in any given year, the state subvention is not at least 50%. So I was, we went right to the last minute in exhaustive negotiations with the agricultural organizations. The Farm Bureau were the major sponsors, but the bill did pass. It's on its way to the governor. I'm quite sure that he will sign it. And as a part of the budget agreement, I still have an opportunity to secure $10 million in funding for the subventions for this year.
Perfect.
Hey, Jim, quick question.
This is a bridge, by the way. We're going to have to continue to do things. There's a four-year sunset on the bill that has passed. And we'll be looking at other options to save the Williamson Act. The way I put it is the Williamson Act is about preserving agricultural land, and this bill was about preserving the Williamson Act. But it should help the counties and encourage them to continue to participate.
That's really good news. Jim, let me ask you a question about the whole budget process that we continue to go through. And two questions, actually. First one is, when we continually go past this and do not adopt a budget in a timely manner, what impact does that have on our bond rating?
Well, it certainly has an impact because it shows that there's an uncertainty uncertainty about the state budget. At any time in the markets or the rating agencies, there's signs of uncertainty, then that's really, really bad. I have been arguing all year for a timely budget, work with dispatch, send those messages to the rating houses that the fiscal house will then be in order. Now, one thing that may happen, and the governor is very insistent about pension reform and budget reform, and we are too, that I think that would be a good signal as well. But the continued prolonged delayed budgets is not a good signal.
Well, it absolutely isn't. The other question that I would have is at some point, it appears to me we've got to come up with a solution. As a person who worked in local government for 20 years, I don't think anybody down there in the state can possibly have an idea of the uncertainty of our lives when you people don't do your job, and that's what you're sent down there for, and that's not personal, it's just a fact. You guys are supposed to do your budget, and if you don't do it, then we're the ones down here who can't pay Medicaid bills, provide lunches for seniors, all kinds of things that come to a head. What is the solution? Is there something that the state of California can do? I mean, we have this great thing that we keep doing about going to the people. Is there perhaps a proposition that we can put before the people that solves this problem once and all? Or is there a bill you guys can enact that force you to lock yourself in a room and come up with a budget in a timely manner?
Well, Trish, everything that's been tried has not really succeeded over the years. The term limits didn't do it. Cutting pay did not do it. So I guess I'm despairing. But my suggestion is establish a habit and a tradition of it passing. I'm not crowing, but during my 5 years as Republican leader in the 80s, there were two budgets that were early, and one was on time. That was the last one that was on time until last year. And last year's actually was another budget that was early, and a budget, by the way, that cut $30 billion out of our state budget. It can happen, but it's just become a habit.
You're absolutely right. It's a habit, but it's a bad habit.
It's a terrible habit, and part of it is individual members, this is my own opinion, have not develop the skills of how to work with each other, how to reach agreements, how to find what you do agree on and resolve that, and then it makes it easier to get to the next step, and that is the things that are a little harder to disagree on, and then finally the things you just won't ever agree on. Then you can deal with those a little bit easier. Well, if I'm saying coming back after 18 years.
Hey Jim.
We got to take a break.
We do need to step in. We do need to step in, and we will go ahead and take our break and come right back. We'll hold you over. You're listening to KCNR 1460.
Discuss all things real estate.
KCNR 1460, it is 8:16. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. High today, 99 degrees. Tonight's low, 71. High tomorrow, 104, but tapering off and getting very nice towards the weekend. Now back to Trish Clark, our guest host on Free Fire Radio.
Good morning, and this is Trish Clark, retired Chester County Supervisor, and we're just going to get some closing thoughts from Assemblyman Jim Nielsen. So where do we go from here, Jim?
Hello, Jim. Okay, we apparently lost our connection with Jim Nielsen, and hopefully he will call back or we'll be able to get him back, or he may have stepped away from the phone. We'll check on that. So, Trish, you were talking, what was that phrase that you, tap?
Tars.
Tars and feathers?
Oh, tars and feathers. Well, actually, and I want to get into that, this is an organization that actually was started by one of our local people here, the owner of Anselmo Vineyards. It's called the Agricultural Regulatory Services Policy, and TARS for short. And basically it's a resolution of alleged environmental infractions can be a drain on the limited resources of small agricultural businesses. Basically, our agricultural businesses in the state of California are out there doing their job within the confines of the laws that we have passed. And at some point, for some reason, we have many times where regulatory agencies step in and start doing other things. I understand we do have Jim Nielsen back on the line. So, Jim, let's have some final thoughts.
You went for coffee, didn't you? Okay, I don't know why we're not hearing the connection here. Hello, Jim. Okay, we're having a problem with our phone system, and I will try to troubleshoot that. Stand by.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and talk about TARS while you're doing that. Basically, as our landowners and Revere Anselmo got into this issue with his property up in Inwood, and ended up with some allegations that were put out by many agencies from federal agencies and state agencies that accused him of some things. He went through an extensive legal battle on his own and was able to get all of those charges dismissed. And basically, he wasn't in the first place doing anything wrong. He simply was, they had alleged that he was doing things that he should not be doing. He proved them wrong.
Third time's the charm. And Jim, were you there?
Yes, I'm here. And Trish, back to your question, developing interpersonal skills, how to work together, I think that's a critical void. And I'm trying to do my part to utilize my experience to say, how can you reach agreement on certain things? And then when you just have a bottom line, like not supporting tax increases to balance the budget, how do you resolve it in that way? And I think that I've seen members wanting to do that, but it's more than anything institutionalizing a habit. Another side of it that's important to note, though, there are so many powerful interests that want money from the budget of every good kind, and then they put pressure on. And I would only submit this: do not support on the ballot making a majority vote to pass a budget. Even if you still maintain a two-thirds vote to pass the tax increases, if a majority vote only invites profligate spending, even Republicans will want to put a lot of spending in the budget. And once you do so, it's going to be very hard to resist the forces to put the tax increases up to pay for all of that spending.
You're absolutely right. I think at some point we've all got to decide what are the priorities for government and limit ourselves to providing them, and then the people need to step up and start providing some of this stuff for themselves.
indeed, that's so. But you know, there is some hope, and the next step in the budget is leaders are going to be meeting with leaders, and I guess for the first time, I'm a little bit optimistic that something can happen by the end of September. Frankly, I came back in August. I was angry about it, but I know you do not resolve things by being angry and being frustrated. So you have to get beyond that and continue to have a dynamic and push some new ideas every day. And a little bit's going on now, and I've had a number of meetings with the governor. He is engaged, and he has taken a strong stand against fixing this budget with tax increases. So there is some hope.
And, Jim, we have an email that just came in from listener Dennis. And he says, if the budget is supposed to be passed on July 1st and it's not, how about holding up the pay of the legislators until it is passed? That's what they do to the counties.
And yeah, that is, in fact, what is the case. The pay is held up. But my point is that's been in place a long time, and that hasn't induced the passage of the budget either.
Do you think
that didn't work?
But they hold it up, and they know they're going to get it in the end. Do you suppose that if, in fact, they just didn't get paid, even retroactively, for every day they didn't have a bill, if that might get their attention?
They would have to forfeit their pay for that?
Yeah, they just simply didn't get paid.
It would be a bit more of an inducement, but frankly, I don't think that would even pull it off itself, even if you forfeited the pay.
The lobbyists would pick up the bill.
It should be done. Yeah. That's just absolutely fine.
Yeah.
The better thing is just to have individuals down there who realize the importance, the urgency. There's been no sense of urgency this year about getting the budget accomplished. Most years there is no sense of urgency. And just to try to get individuals to have those skills to work together and
perhaps,
be very forceful about it.
Perhaps the people should pay more attention to these issues when they're electing the people who serve down there.
That's a good thing. You know, ask what are your problem-solving skills? What would your strategy be for achieving a budget being passed in a responsible way? What would you do, individual candidate, to achieve that?
Well, thank you, Jim. We really thank you for calling in and give us this update today, and would appreciate you calling and talking with Carl and Linda and let us know. And certainly we know that we're well represented with you down there and your skills and. I enjoyed speaking with you this morning.
We need to have another one follow up on water rights. What's going on in Siskiyou County with water rights and fish and game are going to affect us all. We'll
do
that in
another
call.
Yeah, we talked about that a little earlier, and glad to hear from you.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
823 here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. KCNR 1460, 825, and Trish Clark, our guest host this morning. Trish, we have a very special person on the phone. Good morning, Reverge.
Yeah, I'm special because I'm totally derelict and delinquent. I apologize so much. I was supposed to be there myself today. I simply did not remember to do it. Please forgive me, everybody. I was in a very rough flight coming back yesterday over those Cascade Range. Kind of scared me to pieces, but by the time I got back to the ranch, all I could do was take a sleeping pill and go to bed.
Well, so
that's
Reverse,
the only excuse I can offer.
We'll offer you a rain check.
Give us an update. You were down yesterday doing some work on the Agricultural Regulatory Services Policy, TARS. So can you give us an idea of what happened yesterday?
Yeah, I can. There was a fog on my way down, so I had to wait in some weird place called Aguim, California. I would never otherwise have been to Aguim. But I finally got in there. There was about 80 people in the room, all the big wine producers down in the Santa Rosa area, Sonoma County, some out of Napa. The room was filled, as an example, the coffee was totally depleted. There was only crumbs of donuts and muffins left. And they all heard what we're going to do for them with TARS, and they also cleaned us out of all our brochures and swag.
Good. I had just briefly started talking earlier about what TARS is. And intend to go into that a little bit further and kind of explain it. Perhaps, Reverge, kind of lay the groundwork of what happened with you and why you started to talk about TARS. And you got about 3 minutes.
Trish, and I hope you're not mad at me for not being there. You have to be. And
payback is a bitch, revenge.
wait, do I hit the button on that one?
Hey, all right, so in October the 17th, 2007, we had just gotten done harvesting our grapes up here. And I was I had recently acquired a ranch 2 miles off my fence line that was going to be subdivided. So I had spent 3 weeks myself renovating the irrigated pastures up there, and there was a terrible encroachment of blackberries, and the best soils that I own on either ranch were across that creek. I had a guy up there removing the blackberries that we had started with doing with 1,200 goats eating through it at an acre a day. So they were really just lifting the canes out of there. After the harvest, we were all enjoying ourselves, and the backhoe operator came running down the hill, having been just recently confronted by a fish cop with a gun, who warned him to jump down off that equipment, to turn it off, and to go find me, which he did, and I was, you know, compelled to immediately start spreading straw and hay around my pasture. Next day, there was a number of issues that took place between me, Fish and Game, and the Water Quality Control Board, and they accused me of all kinds of harm and violation to the environment. More letters and actions piled on from the government side, and before I knew it, I had to fight off 5 government agencies, all accusing me of harm to the world, which could cost me either $10,000 or $25,000 per day in fines and fees. So it took me 11 months, 6 hours a day with an attorney to fight that all off, to prove that I had done nothing wrong. It kind of makes sense that it isn't illegal to plow and to sow. Well, I find out that this is not only obvious to everyone, it's also guaranteed by federal law. So I called a friend of mine in who had from the Marine Corps, but he had gone into sophisticated insurance products, and I called him. His name's Tim Kraft, and I said...
Reverge, we're going to have you hold on that thought right there because we're coming up against the hard news break. We're going to hold you over at the bottom of the hour because we do want to hear more about this story, okay?
Anything I can do to help you guys, I feel so bad about it.
All righty. KCNR 1460, we're coming up on our news break at the top of the hour. More with Reverge and Samo and our guest host Trish Clark coming up. This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media. KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. It is 8:33 in Shasta County. And if you're just joining us, Carl and Linda Bott are winging their way back from the East Coast. At last check-in, they were at Chicago's O'Hare preparing for the next leg of their journey, and we wish them a safe journey home. Taking care of things here right now is Trish Clark, and on the phone, R.C. Anselmo. And good morning to you both.
Good morning, and R.C., continue with your thought about TARS, the Agricultural Regulatory Services Policy.
Right, so before the break, I had explained a little bit about the 5 agencies who came onto my ranch accusing me of anything that they could invent as an environmental violation. None of it was true. Consider, for instance, caravans of biologists and people even with scuba gear diving into your creek. You know, that was an odd one. So my friend Tim Kraft, he did put together an insurance business and model based on what the doctors had done to fight off all that medical malpractice tort. Little defense fund. People pay into TARS, and we handle all the defense for them, including the field engineers, plant and fish biologists, and we provide the entire service of their defense. They get a gate plaque and a wallet card, and if the government comes, they just whip out their card and say, talk to them and get off my land. So that's the way we go about it. And $250,000 of legal defense is pretty effective at fighting off anything the government can throw at you, unless you have nuclear waste in mason jars hidden on your land or dead bodies unexplained there for somebody to find.
And bottom line, Revere, this is not a policy that gets you out of something you've done wrong. It's to protect those people and agricultural producers in the state of California who, in fact, are following all the rules. And as you were, and just because they don't have the ability or the time or the knowledge to fight these regulatory agencies, are literally held up time and time again.
That's right. What generally happens is that a regulatory agency will wait, cruising the roads, until they see a ranch or a farm undertaking an endeavor. They see equipment moving, they see something being constructed, or a crop rotation, so anywhere where they see money being spent, then they will come, and they will jam you up demanding fines and fees from you from anything they can invent that you harmed the environment with, and you'll have to pay them off in order to continue their work. That's their MO.
And in most cases, and for a lot of people who just don't have the legal expertise or the time to do it and are just busy making a living and producing from their land, sometimes it's just plain easier to give them the $25,000 and move on.
It is easier, but it's not the right thing to do. And in fact, that decision that most of the Californians have made has encouraged a bully. So now it's become almost
a way of life. That's how they maintain their agencies, is by collecting these usury fees.
That's right, and there's a wrinkle in the law which allows them to provide most of the monies that they collect from fines and fees directly to their own budget. It's not, most of it is not general fund money. They can pay themselves with it. And when I heard that, I don't mind telling you, I was on a pasture tour again with the government, and I heard that about them, and I said right to their faces, that makes you bone-in-the-nose New Guinea headhunters.
Well, Revere, I've always had an issue with the environmental litigation industry, and to call it anything but an industry is to ignore the truth. So is the government getting in on that action?
Geez, I don't know. I think they feel, if you really talk to them sort of off the record, they feel very much used by the legislation and the special interests that want, protection for a salamander, protection for a bird, protection for a fish. These are really just they're duck blinds. What they want is to control the food and to control the water and to make the decisions about what happens on private land.
We were talking earlier about the Coastal Commission and their antics, ranging from affecting water rights up in Siskiyou County, of all places, about as far as you could get from the Pacific Ocean because of a coho salmon issue. And also, marinas are facing the specter of having to file constant environmental reports that will put many of them out of business. And these commissions, of course, are appointed. They are not elected. There's no leash on these folks. And in theory, a waterway on your property that eventually makes its way to the ocean could fall under the aegis of the Coastal Commission. Is that a concern?
That is a concern. And by the way, yesterday in Santa Rosa, I heard this. I have to confirm it myself, but I have no reason to doubt it, that the rationale, the pretext, and the studies for which all those actions are being taken up in Siskiyou County are based on contrived field reports, and 75% of it has been refuted very handily. We'll have to get into that and confirm that for anybody who cares, but that's where it stands now, that it is just a trumped-up occasion to go and try and rescind people's deeded water rights.
Well, I find it amusing that seasonal streams that a self-respecting mosquito fish would not inhabit have suddenly been declared as essential to the survival of the coho salmon.
That's right.
So to wrap up, just in a nutshell, the agricultural regulatory services policy is an insurance policy that provides $250,000 of legal defense coverage to protect policyholders from unwarranted environmental actions. How do people get
warranted
more
warranted or not? If the government accuses one of our policyholders of an environmental violation, we're there.
Okay, and
we're
how does
right into it?
How does somebody find out more information about this, Rivers?
Well, there's a website that is called www.protectedbytars.com, and that will explain a lot there. There was a press release recently that Alliant, who's the retail vendor, they put it out. It was picked up by MSNBC and I think Yahoo Finance, and the word is getting out. So the phones have been ringing. The sales have gone very well. It's uncanny that in the United States of America, this kind of thing is actually a brand new product that serves a desperate marketplace. How can I be protected from my government?
Can't make this stuff up.
That's exactly right, and certainly that's probably just a little one small piece of the issues that are being faced in the United States today. And on to another subject very quickly. You're also involved in with another group that's kind of addressing some of these issues, and certainly I've been following and been a little involved with that too, and that's the Combat Veterans for Congress PAC. And there's this is a group of, 26 veterans, combat veterans, who are running in 16 states for Congress this year. Tell us about
that's
that.
Right. Yeah, 26 candidates in 16 states. I think the last time I heard, I think 22 out of the 26 had made it through their primaries, so they are contenders for those seats.
And does that There's include the new lady or the new guy in Alaska that beat out? That was a great story.
I didn't. I just saw that. I'm not informed on that particular one of Murkowski.
Yes, and he was, well, I've forgotten his name, too. I shouldn't have brought that up. Don't know enough about it. But it was the one that Senator or Governor Palin had supported in the Tea Party movement that unseated a Republican up there of the dyed-in-the-wool spend Republican thing that we had under Bush, unfortunately. And so some of these kind of different candidates are stepping forward and making some inroads.
Well, I really hope so. Something has to occur if the present plan of action can't be somehow stopped or derailed in November. We're all going to really hit some more serious trouble than already we've been into.
So there is a web page out there if people are interested in supporting some of these candidates who
Combat Veterans for Congress.
Yes, and so they can go there and get some great information about these 26 candidates and maybe 24 of them who have survived through their primaries. But some interesting things going on that we're involved here in Shasta County, but they go beyond that. And Rivers, we thank you for calling in this morning. We've got to go to a break, and we'll figure out what your debt will be for standing me up this morning, but I'm sure we'll get beyond it.
Talk it to me, because I owe you big.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Rivers. 8:44, 16 minutes now in front of 9 o'clock on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. KCNR 1460, home of Free Fire Media. It is 8:46. And the weather forecast from the North Valley today, it'll be pretty close to the century mark with a high of 99. Low tonight, 71. Tomorrow's high, though, 104, tapering off as we head in later in the week. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Now back to our guest host, Trish Clark.
Well, and good morning, and I've enjoyed spending this morning with you from 7 o'clock, and we've had a lot of subjects going on, and just finished our discussion with Rivers Anselmo from Anselmo Vineyards, who, among other things in our community, has started this great TARS program. I invite you to go online and look for that and read a little bit more about it. It's a great thing that's going to be a big help to the agricultural producers in the state of California. and a very innovative kind of an idea. Moving on to another subject that's near and dear to my heart, a program I've been involved with for many, many years, is the Power to Seniors program. And with winter coming on, we're again reminded that we do have, in an economy like we have today, certain number of senior citizens out there who have issues with their power bills. And way back many years ago, probably about 10 years ago now, we started a program called Power to Seniors. And it works in conjunction with the City of Reading Share Program. And what happens is if you live in the City of Reading, you round up your utility bill, and that money goes to a program called Power to Seniors, which is administered by Golden Umbrella, and it's used to pay utility bills for low-income seniors throughout Shasta County. We had a fundraiser for many years called the Celebrity Soup Kitchen, and was very successful in raising $15,000 to $20,000 a year that went directly into that fund. Last year, the soup kitchen didn't happen. For various and sundry reasons, I had retired from county government and kind of spearheaded that whole project for many, many years. It's under the auspices of the Shasta County Older Adult Policy Council, which I was instrumental in putting together many years ago with one of the people from social services. His name just went right out of my mind. Sorry about that. And we started that program to kind of coordinate senior services in Shasta County. A volunteer has stepped forward, a group of people are back together, and the Power to Seniors Celebrity Soup Kitchen is once again going to take place in Shasta County on October 28th at the Veterans Hall. Just kind of putting that out there for people, save that date, start getting involved. If you'd like to put a basket together, you'd like to be involved, maybe donate soup, or just attend the soup kitchen, put that on your list of things to do. If you're interested in that, you certainly can give me a call, and I can put you in touch with the new chairperson of that. I'm honored to have been asked to MC the soup kitchen again this year, so I'll be there that night, but I'm really not involved in the production of it. But if you want to give me a call about it again, mark your date, October 28th. We're going to once again be doing the Celebrity Soup Kitchen. The Straight Ahead Big Band will be playing again. The Seroptimus organization will be providing wine and beer for your enjoyment, adult beverages. And so it's going to be a great function again. I'm sure that the committee has all kinds of new inventive ideas to make it a really successful function. But those of you who had attended will remember that we've served from 400 to 500 people with great soup from all of the various restaurants throughout Shasta County. And again, all of those funds go directly to pay low-income seniors' utility bills throughout Shasta County. Really a good time and a lot of fun, and that's going to be happening again on October 28th.
It's now about 9.5 minutes before 9 o'clock here on KCNR 1460. Still time for a call or two. Phone lines are open at 605-4567. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. And it is now about 6 minutes in front of 9 o'clock on KCNR 1460 Free Fire Radio. Carl and Linda will be back tomorrow. This portion of the show brought to you by B&T Satellite off Airport Road, just down from the Burrito Bandito. Doug Tooley's the owner, 82nd Airborne veteran. He has been servicing local customers since 1985. Give him a call at 244-1988 on the web at ReadingHDTV.com. Now, round the back turn into the home stretch, Trish Clark.
And good morning, and I've enjoyed sharing some time with you this morning and kind of expounding on some of my thoughts, and just some final thoughts that I have is that I invite you to start taking responsibility for the kind of government that we have, and certainly have that opportunity now right here in Shasta County. We have a race for the 5th supervisorial district in Shasta County. I invite you to check out both of those candidates, the incumbent and the challenger, and make some serious decisions based on facts, not what they'd like you to believe about them, but really search out the facts about both of those people and make a wise decision. Certainly you've got the Reading City Council race, which is going to be, I think, kind of a which direction do you want the city to go, and I give a lot of wonderful candidates there and people who really care about the future of your city. take the time to be involved. Go to the times when they get together and talk about things. Be an educated voter, and above all, please get out and vote. The statistics that are just incredible in this United States with all we've got going is so few people who are eligible to vote are actually registered, and of those registered voters, so few people actually go out and vote. You've got a very small portion of the population actually making the decisions that impact our very daily life. And finally, I never get on the radio and have open air that I don't take a few little time to talk about the Frontier Senior Center down in Anderson, which is my life after retirement. I kind of am involved down there and continue to work with the seniors in the South County. And the Frontier Senior Center is certainly the jewel of the county in my mind. There's all kinds of things going on down there, from computer classes to lunches to dances to bingo, quilting, all kinds of new classes starting up. We've got some new card games going, some china painting, all kinds of opportunities. Well, we invite anyone who has something they think the seniors might be interested in. If you'd like to start a new class and have four or five people who'd like to take it, we're more than willing to open it up and let you come down and teach that skill or share your knowledge about an issue. We do have some excellent computer instructors whose classes are now starting back up for the winter months, and it's a growing demographic of people at over 50, over 60 who are getting into computers and Facebook. Bob was telling me that the largest growing demographic in Facebook users are grandmas, and I certainly can understand that, because we then get to go and keep in touch with our grandkids throughout the United States by being on Facebook and learning a little more about their world. But I invite you to, if you are a senior and would love to come down and just be a part of the South County and a place to go, there's fun stuff going on every day down at the Frontier Senior Center, including this Sunday between 8 and 11. We have our once-a-month breakfast where you have your choice of pancakes, sausage eggs, French toast, or biscuits and gravy. I'm one of the waitresses. Would love to serve you breakfast in the South County at the Frontier Senior Center. It's on the first Sunday of each and every month. And I invite you to stop down and say hi. And we would love to see you. I would tell you that there's some good information on these local broadcasts, and invite you to continue to listen to this station and catch Carl and Linda. They're going to have a real interesting story when they get back about all of the issues that they've been dealing with as they've been gone. It's been a pleasure to be with them, with you this morning, and I want to close with a little quote from the novelist I mentioned earlier, Ayn Rand. And she says, "The U.S. Constitution is a limitation on the government, not on private individuals. It does not prescribe the conduct of private individuals, only the conduct of the government. It is not a charter for government power, but a charter of the citizens' protection against government." It's been my pleasure to be with you this morning. And
well, we have just over 1 minute, and Nancy's on the line with a question about the senior center, and I think we can squeeze her in. Nancy, if we make it really quick, we can probably squeeze you in. Are you there?
Okay, yes, I am. Hi, Trish. This is Nancy calling in, and I just want to say we love our Frontier citizens, and they are supported by United Way, and there's a ticket outlet for the Celebrity Waiter Night.
Yes, we are. We have tickets available at the Frontier Senior Center for anyone who'd like to attend the Celebrity Waiter Night, which is a United Way fundraiser and kickoff for the year, and it's September 11th.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in tickets, we certainly invite you to stop by the Frontier Senior Center and pick those up.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Trish.
All right, thank you, Nancy.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Well, that just about finishes it out. Trish, a definite pleasure to work with you during the show this morning, and I'm sorry we didn't have Rivers here in person, but we did have him here on phone and in spirit, and it all worked out.
I think it went all right. We didn't have any dead air time, so we're good. And I thank you all for listening in this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.